Hi, this is Jim.
And this is Max.
Check out our podcast, The Step Over, Liberty Ballers Podcast Network, for all of your Sixers needs.
Player analysis, game breakdowns, who would look coolest in a headband, and more.
Subscribe to Liberty Ballers Podcast feed on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts, and check out The Step Over, a podcast about Sixers basketball.
Mostly.
Batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 249. I'm John Stolness from SB Nation's Phillies blog, The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. Coming up, going to talk to my good friend Mike Petriello from StatCast and MLB.com. We're going to talk about the latest hot stove rumors involving the Phillies and a couple of pieces that he has written recently on the defense of Bryce Harper and how the effect the Phillies defense had, what effect it had on Phillies pitchers last year. Going to talk a little bit about Odubel Herrera and see what his 2019 season might be looking like. Plus, I will have your stat of the week. But first, folks, just want to remind you, if you haven't done so yet, head on over to Apple Podcasts and leave a rating and a review for the show. Those five-star ratings and those reviews help out a lot, get us up those Apple Podcast rankings in the sports and recreation area. And continue to check out thegoodfight.com each and every day for a new content that we're posting up there all the time as well. All right, folks, so we found out that pitchers and catchers will officially report to Clearwater on February 13th, and the first full squad workout is set for February 18th. And the question that every Phillies fan has in their mind right now, their addled, crazily crackled mind right now is, will Manny Machado or Bryce Harper be in Clearwater? And then will anyone else currently not a part of the 40-man roster be in Clearwater with the Phillies next month? And folks, we just still have no freaking idea, because all we are hearing right now are loud noises. That's it. We're hearing a lot of national writers spout off with the different rumors as they're being handed them on little slips of 3x5 cards from agents and executives from other teams. And it's maddening right now. It is absolutely maddening to follow this hot stove, and specifically the latest bits of quote-unquote news and information on Macharper, because we're not getting any real news or information. For example, on Tuesday night, USA Today's Bob Nightingale sent out this tweet. The Phillies will have Bryce Harper or Manny Machado or possibly both in uniform on opening day. Now, while I love the idea and I love the fact that he's not hedging on this, there's no confirmation. There's no sourcing. There's no reason why he thinks that's so. I mean, he said on 97.5 The Fanatic on Wednesday about signing both Harper and Machado, quote, "I still think it's possible. I know the Phillies are downplaying it, but John Middleton is the one writing the checks." That's according to Bob Nightingale. But there's nothing, there's no reporting. And I realize this is a rough time right now for baseball reporters. But we had a big brute, because they're trying to fill a vacuum. They're trying to fill a vacuum. They have to write about something. They have to tweet about stuff. But there's just no news. And right now, the whole baseball world is focused on the Phillies, focused on Philadelphia. And the Phillies are not leaking. They're not leaking anything, at least as far as we can tell. None of the Phillies beat writers really have any concrete information. I still, my heart jumps whenever I see a Jim Salisbury tweet, because I think, does he have the information? If any one of the Phillies beat writers are going to get it, it's probably going to be either Jim Salisbury or Scott Lauber. I mean, those are the two guys that generally are coming up with information, Jim Salisbury specifically. So every time I have Jim's tweets notified, I get notifications on my phone, because I feel like if Phillies news breaks, it's going to be him or it's going to be one of the national guys. But the national guys are just, it's now diarrhea of baseball rumors. It's just, it's electronic vomit on your tweet deck right now. And it's driving everybody absolutely crazy. We're going to get to some stuff with Dan Lozano, Manny Machado's agent, and Buster Olney and Bob Nightingale coming up in just a second. But let me just catch everybody up on the latest rumors as they are on Wednesday night here as I'm recording this podcast. Ken Rosenthal was on MLB Network, as he is every morning, and he said it seems clear that the Phillies are going to sign at least one of Macharper. I'm using Macharper. He didn't use Macharper. If I can get these national guys to start using the phrase Macharper, I will be just as happy as can be. But he said that really right now the Phillies are the focus of baseball. 3, 2, 1. Rosenthal also said the Phillies are prepared to sign either guy right now.
This is the number one team to watch right now. Why? Because every indication is that they're getting one of the two big free agents, Bryce Harper or Manny Machado. Why do we say that? One, they have the interest in both. Two, they have the money.
And he said the Phillies are in an enviable position right now.
One thing that is difficult for fans, media, and everyone on the outside to do is read intentions. Interpret agendas, and there are a lot of conflicting agendas and intentions here, but the bottom line is the Phillies, in a sense, can't lose.
The Phillies can't lose. How often have you heard that said in your lifetime? Now, here's the part that's going to drive everybody crazy, that there really is no rush on the part of Philadelphia to sign Macharper.
Let's say, for example, Machado goes to the White Sox tomorrow. Well, Phillies can just ramp it up for Harper and pay whatever needs to be paid. Now, the danger in that scenario is they're all alone with Scott Boras. It's not necessarily a great place to be, but the Red Sox last offseason with J.D. Martinez. They sat and they sat and they sat until J.D. Martinez came to their price range. The Phillies can do the same thing, and I'm not necessarily expecting all of this to unfold quickly unless the Phillies just decide, let's go get Machado, let's do it right away, and that's that. There really is no reason for them to do that. They can wait. They can wait for this whole thing to play out. And the risk is they lose the player that they ideally want, whether it's Machado or Harper. But it just seems from the outside, again, that they're in a position of great strength.
And finally, specifically as it comes to Bryce Harper, there doesn't seem to be anyone else involved.
The Nationals, we've talked about them for Harper. It would take really going into luxury tax jail for several years if they were to do that, especially with the free agency of Anthony Rendon looming after this year. So who are the real threats to the Phillies for Harper? Well, maybe not Washington. Maybe Chicago, the White Sox, okay. Maybe some other team, we don't know. There are always other teams, but again, right now, if you're the Phillies and you're sitting there with stupid money, as your owner has pronounced, you've got to feel pretty good about where you are.
John Heyman reported on Wednesday that Harper and Gabe Kapler really hit it off during their Las Vegas meeting, which could be another factor in the Phillies perhaps shifting their focus to Harper. It's easy to see that, according to John Heyman, that both men are quite intense. But, you know, earlier in the offseason, I know Howard Eskin wrote a piece saying, is Gabe Kapler a reason free agents will stay away from Philadelphia? This would appear to dispute that notion. I can't imagine players. Gabe Kapler got a raw deal in this city last year. There were some missteps, no doubt about it, but I don't think Gabe Kapler is as widely criticized or is met with the skepticism league-wide, or at least among players, as maybe he is in Philadelphia. But maybe he is, I don't know. But it certainly appears as though, according to the Heyman report, and again, we have some of these reporters like John Heyman, who's not even reporting news. I mean, this is just, it's almost like a thought pops into his head, and out it comes in the tweet deck. It's just, there's no reporting going on right now. It's just, it would basically be like, if I had an impulse, and I tweeted stuff out, it's different because you all know that I don't have any inside information. I'm not a news breaker. This is, you know, I do this because I enjoy talking about the Phillies and I enjoy following the team, but it's not my job to break news. I mean, I would love to be that guy. If somebody, you know, if there are people within the Phillies organization or around baseball who would like to, you know, use me as a conduit and will go on the record, then great. But I'm not going to just go out and just, you know, one random dude tells me something and I'm going with it. That's not how journalism works. That's not how it's supposed to work anyway. But I know it's really tough right now. It's really tough to do the job of being a baseball reporter right now because nobody knows anything. Nobody has any idea what's going on. One of the few people who I would listen to, no matter what they said, is friend of the podcast, Jeff Passan, now of ESPN. He appeared on the Yes Network with Michael Kay and indicated it seems clear to one insider that he has spoken to, who he trusts, what is going to happen with Macharper.
You know, someone called me earlier today and said the way that this is all shaping up is that Harper's going to Philadelphia and Manny Machado's going to New York. Now, this is one person. This is not one person with either the Phillies or the Yankees. But this is someone who's been in the game for a long time and tends to read tea leaves well. And I think he just believes that the Yankees make too much sense for Manny Machado, and Manny Machado wants to be a New York Yankee for it not to happen. But it has to happen at a particular price point, and what that price point is, I don't quite know yet. I wish I could come on and tell you the Yankees could get Manny Machado for this number. I just don't know what that number is, but there is definitely mutual affection on both sides, and if it comes down to it and nobody blows Manny Machado out of the water financially and with a situation where he's going to win, the Yankees are lurking there just waiting for the right opportunity to pound.
Okay, so what is taking so long? Why is it January 16th and we're still, and it still doesn't seem as if Macharper is close to signing with anybody? What is taking so long here? Well, we got an indication of why it might be taking so long, at least for Manny Machado. Buster Olney and Bob Nightingale both reported that the Chicago White Sox offer to Machado was for $175 million over 7 years. Olney tweeted, in some ways, their approach is like Boston's with J.D. Martinez last winter. The Red Sox offered $100 million and waited for 2 months. If the White Sox offer emerges as the best, a big question mark is, would Machado New York Yankees re-engage? So using that White Sox offer as a launching point for the Yankees to get back into the mix. And I got to tell you, if the best offer is $175 million over 7 years, you would think the Yankees would jump back into the fray. Nightingale added a follow-up tweet. He quote-tweeted Buster's tweet with one of his own, saying, the White Sox made their 7-year, $175 million offer about 2 weeks ago and haven't felt the need to alter it and bid against themselves. That implies, by the way, that the Phillies have not beaten that offer. Just like Martinez last year with Red Sox, as Buster ESPN points out, whose only other known offer was a 1-year proposal from the Diamondbacks. Now, here's the deal. You look at the 7-year, $175 million number, and you think to yourself, that can't be true. That can't be the best offer. If that is the best offer, you can understand why Manny Machado hasn't signed, because it's an insulting offer. But that's why it doesn't make any sense. How could that be the best offer so far? The Phillies, even though we don't know what they have officially offered Manny Machado, if we know that at one point in the offseason, Machado was their clear number one target, and you know that they have virtually unlimited payroll to sign one of these guys, and you know John Middleton wants to spend stupid money, they're not going to lowball Manny Machado. They're going to beat that offer. They're going to have an offer out. They've already made an offer. We know, at the very least, we know the Phillies have made one offer, and we had heard last week that they were preparing a second offer. Whether that's happened again, we don't know, because the Phillies are Fort Knox. They don't leak stuff, and that's commendable. I give them credit for not being leakers. I wish we had more information. It makes our job tougher, but I give them credit. Nobody knows exactly what hand the Phillies have. But $175 million over 7 years, the Phillies, I gotta believe, have beaten that offer. I gotta believe it's in the $200 million range, $250 million range. I mean, $175 million would be $150 million less than what Machado has been asking for, the Giancarlo Stanton $325 million deal. But this report by Olney and Nightingale obviously rankled Machado's agent Dan Lozano, because Lozano released a statement eviscerating Buster Olney and Bob Nightingale for their reporting. I'm going to read the whole thing here, because I have never seen an agent rip into reporters. And I would imagine Lozano has used Nightingale and Olney to pass along information to help his client out in the public sphere, to perhaps, you know, I gotta believe Lozano is not immune to using the media to increase his client's leverage. But here's what the statement said from Lozano. I have known Bob Nightingale and Buster Olney for many years and have always had a good professional relationship with both. But their recent reporting, like many other rumors in the past several months, have been inaccurate and reckless when it comes to Manny Machado. I don't know if their sources are blatantly violating the collective bargaining agreement by intentionally misleading them to try and affect negotiations through the public, or are just flat-out lying to them for other reasons. But the truth is that their reports on the details of the White Sox level of interest in Manny are completely wrong. Now, let me step in here to say, obviously, it hurts Manny Machado's leverage for it to be known out there that the best offer the White Sox have made is 7 years, $175 million. It benefits Machado for teams to think that the White Sox offer is more, because then they would offer more to try and beat that deal. So let's not, you know, let's understand that as we listen to this statement. Lozano continued, "I'm well aware that the entire baseball universe, fans, players, teams, and media members alike, are starved for information about this free agent market for all players, including Manny. But I'm not going to continue to watch the press be manipulated into tampering with not just my client, but all of these players' livelihoods, as they have been doing this entire offseason. The absence of new information to report is no excuse to fabricate news or regurgitate falsehoods without even attempting to confirm their validity, and it is a disservice to baseball fans everywhere when the media does just that. Moving forward, I will continue to respect the CBA's prohibition on negotiations through the media and hope that others would do the same." Now, this is coming across as a guy who has never, ever gone to the media and passed along information to reporters in order to help his clients. And listen, he has never passed information along to me, because Dan Lozano has probably never heard my name in his entire life. Okay, again, I'm not a big player on the national scene in baseball. I'm a bit player in the Philadelphia baseball scene, and I think even that's giving myself a little bit too much credit. But the fact remains here: I find it laughable that Lozano is taking this high and mighty, "I would never use the media to try and influence negotiation." Of course you would. You're an agent. That's what agents do. That's what you're supposed to do for your client. Nobody thinks you're doing anything wrong necessarily. That's what agents do. You use the media to get information out there to help get your client a better offer. But it does put reporters, I think, in a tricky situation. If Dan Lozano or Scott Boras comes to you and says, "Here's what's going on," how do you not report that? Now, are you being used? Yeah, you probably are. But here you have the person who is closest to this free agent telling you information. Or maybe it's a team executive. Maybe a Yankees executive passed that information along to Buster Olney in an attempt to try and get the price down to where the Yankees want it to be. But nevertheless, maybe a senior aide to Cashman tells Buster Olney this. Well, how does Buster Olney not go forward with that? Should he try and get maybe a second source? Yeah, that's probably a good idea. Go to Lozano, go to the White Sox and say, "Hey, is this true? Is this accurate?" And you can report the conflicting. But that's the problem, is that nobody goes on the record with these things. You talk to a major league executive who spoke on condition of anonymity. I understand it's frustrating for fans. But it also, journalists also have a tricky line to walk here. Passing along information that you think is interesting or useful, but at the same time can influence negotiations. It's hard to be a reporter in these types of situations. I have some sympathy for these guys. But at the same time, you know, in journalism school, I was taught you need two sources if they're not going to go on the record. And I still think that's the safest way to go. If you want to have a good reputation as a journalist, that's how you have to do it. You have two sources. If they're anonymous, at least two sources moving forward. Sometimes you need more than that, if the sources, the two anonymous sources, are not solid. And that's probably why you don't see Phillies beat writers putting up a lot of stuff, is because I think that they act under that guise. And that's important, because for Phillies fans, we just want accurate information. I honestly think fans now would be happy to just have these guys go into silent mode. And I know people who have muted some of these guys, who have muted Nightingale, and John Heyman has been absolutely unbearable. And I don't have a problem with John Heyman normally, but he's been unbearable these last few weeks with all of these nonsense tweets that contain no information, no solid reporting. You know, it's just, give me, I'll, there's some of these guys you just have to mute, and I have to do a better job of not reacting to every single piece of news that comes down the pike, because I know I'm part of the problem too, because we all want this to be over. And later on, John Heyman and Hector Gomez both basically affirmed Lozano's statement and refuted the Olney Nightingale story, saying that the deal from the White Sox was at least in the $200 million neighborhood. Again, we don't know what the Phillies' offer is. But, you know, if the number is low for Machado, if we are talking $175 to $200 million, if that's the number that ends up getting Machado signed, it is possible that the Phillies could sign both Machado and Harper, because we don't know how much the Phillies are offering Harper either. We just, you know, there is a way to sign both of these guys. But we also saw a tweet on Tuesday that said, the Phillies are not necessarily focusing on Harper and Machado, but could be focusing on Harper, Dallas Keuchel, and Craig Kimbrell. That all three of those guys. There was another Bob Nightingale tweet on Tuesday night. Bob Nightingale tweeted, the Phillies, according to team executives, have visions, whatever the hell that means, have visions of signing Harper, Keuchel, and Kimbrell. Now, I still think it would be better to go out and get Harper and Machado. Just get Harper and Machado. Don't overthink it, because as you've heard me say, I'm not the biggest Dallas Keuchel guy. If they get Dallas Keuchel on a four-year deal, okay. But he's a number three. I would much rather go get Harper and Machado and just roll with the bullpen that we have and go sign Wade Miley to a cheap deal, frankly. I think Wade Miley could have a better season than Dallas Keuchel anyway next year. I love Wade Miley. I think he'd be a good fit for the price. But I asked this question on Twitter, and I got about a thousand replies, and I asked the question, what would you prefer, Harper and Machado, Harper, Keuchel, and Kimbrell, or Machado, Keuchel, and Kimbrell? And the vast majority of you, about 6 in 10 of you, said Harper and Machado. That would be your preference. About a third of you said Harper, Keuchel, and Kimbrell. Only 6% wanted Machado, Keuchel, and Kimbrell. That is by far the least favorite collection of free agents that you would want to see the Phillies to go and get. So look, after talking about this with you for almost 20 minutes here is the bottom line. We wait. As Jim Salisbury mentioned in a piece for NBC Sports Philadelphia here on Wednesday, the Phillies are set up to win here. This delay may be infuriating, but it has actually played into the Phillies' hands, where they might not have to spend as much money on these guys, and maybe will allow them to sign both guys. But it certainly has knocked some teams out of the running, it seems. We've heard some mystery teams involved here. We saw, I think, earlier that the St. Louis Cardinals were a team rumored to be a mystery team on Machado, but now they're out. Really, who other than the Phillies and White Sox is in on Bryce Harper? You heard Ken Rosenthal mention just a few minutes ago, the Nationals are going to, they have too much money tied up into other players. They're going to be in luxury tax hell for a long time. That's what Jason Stark tweeted out. They're going to be in luxury tax hell for a long time if they sign Bryce Harper. So that just doesn't seem like that's possible. The Dodgers haven't really gotten in. Maybe they're waiting in the wings. Maybe they're still just hanging out, waiting to see how this market, you know, works out. I don't think the Yankees are involved in Bryce Harper, but I think they're still hanging around the Machado talks, the periphery, seeing what happens. But we're all just waiting here, and no matter what happens, the Phillies are in a phenomenal position to land either guy or both. Now, I think if they'd offered Machado, if they were to offer the Machado a $300 million deal right now, they could probably sign him tomorrow. But why offer a guy $300 million when his top offer is $200 million? I get that. I don't want the Phillies to overbid the market by $100 million if they don't have to. Especially when it seems like no one else in baseball really wants these guys like the Phillies do. But I will tell you, the heat is on this baseball team now. I mean, especially after that lowball White Sox offer was out there that's now been disputed, but I still don't think the Machado number is coming anywhere close to his asking price of $325 million. And so I think the pressure is on the Phillies right now. They have to get one of these guys, and it sure seems like they're going to. And we have agents posturing, teams are posturing, this mental game continues, and the one thing I can say that we can all agree on is we all want it to end. Please, please let it end. But one other thing. if this delay, if this stretching out of the free agent season until February means that the Phillies could get both or land one of them on a deal that allows them to comfortably address other needs, then this delay will have been worth it. We'll all look back and we'll say, well, it didn't happen soon, but they got Bryce Harper for $275 million. That's about $100 million less than we thought they could get him for, and now they can still make moves. They're not nearly as hamstrung. They could make more moves in free agency next year. They could trade for a high-priced guy at the trade deadline this year, or they could save up for the unicorn that is Mike Trout in a couple of seasons. Lots of different ways to go, but I think the one thing that we can say as this podcast is being recorded on Wednesday night, January 16th, is that the Phillies are in the driver's seat to land either one of Bryce Harper or Manny Machado.
This ball is out of here!
And joining me to talk about the craziness we've seen here over the last 48 hours and to talk about a piece that he wrote last week about the Phillies' defense and how it's affected certain pitchers last year is Mike Petriello from StatCast and MLB.com. You can follow Mike on Twitter at Mike_Petriello. Mike, thanks for coming back on Hitting Season. How are you, man?
I'm doing fabulous, John. How about yourself?
Doing great. Good to talk to you again. And I'm glad I'm getting you on now because this stuff that's been going on today with Lozano and with Buster Olney and Bob Nightingale and all the rumor, it seems this maybe everybody's just going crazy because the Macharper saga has gone on for so long here. But I mean, the statement by Lozano denouncing Olney and Nightingale, I've never seen anything like that where it was so personal. This attack on a couple of reporters who I'm sure that he's dealt with in the past. He mentioned in his statement that he dealt with in the past. It's very stunning. What do you make of everything we've seen here in the last couple of days and really the last couple of weeks here on the hot stove as we wait for these two guys to make a decision?
I think the only thing I know for sure is that everybody in baseball is losing their minds right now. I think that's true for the teams who aren't being aggressive enough for some of these guys. I think it's true for like Yasmani Grandal, who apparently misread the market completely and turned down a good 4-year deal to get a 1-year deal. And I think it's true with baseball Twitter. I mean, you had, Olney or Nightingale, whichever one was out there first, with this report about 7 and 175 from Machado, and everybody lost their minds. It's like the end of the baseball world. And then 3 hours later, it seems like that might not have actually been true in any way, unless it was. Because who would have ever heard of an agent using social media to advance his client's interests? So I guess the main takeaway here is that nobody knows absolutely anything, and I know that's incredibly frustrating, but I'm not going to believe any of these rumors, I don't think, until, pen is put to paper. Like, I guess I believe the teams who have been rumored are probably the teams who are actually in. That makes sense enough. But I kind of joked on Twitter earlier today that if you were to go back over the last 5 months or so and you take the big 5 or 6 rumor guys, Heyman and Olney and Rosenthal and whoever else you like, and you just collected their Harper and Machado rumors, you'd probably have hundreds of them. Yeah. And it would probably be a really fascinating story to go back and see how things have changed and try to guess how much of this is real info, how much of it is the team trying to drive a story, how much of it is the agent trying to drive interest in this guy. It's probably the same thing that happens every year. It's over a much longer period of time this year. So I think it's driving everyone a little crazier.
I think you just gave me a good fight article. I'm going to have to go back through the timeline and assemble because it is, I think we all thought that one of these two guys would have signed long before now, but I mean, we've seen these last two off seasons have been completely aberrant compared to off seasons past, And with a guy, I think we all figured that with people as talented and young as Machado and Harper, that there would be a bunch of suitors willing to meet the asking price. And I mean, last summer we were throwing around numbers like $400 million, $450 million. I mean, two summers ago, people were talking about Bryce Harper in the $500 million number, and now we're hearing, Machado. Even if the Nightingale and Olney number is low, the 175 number is low, the fact that it's not in the 300s is still mind-boggling to me. And it seems like we just have so many teams that have gone out of their way to talk themselves out of these guys. It's playing in the Phillies' favor right now. But can you explain why it seems the bloom is off the rose on these guys? I mean, were their ups and downs last year so bad that really there are just two or three teams in on each guy?
I do think it's foolish to focus on the flaws that they showed last year over the strengths they obviously have. I don't think you can ignore that either. It's really hard to say either one had an incredible platform year, you know, because especially with Harper, the poor defense, inconsistency, it's not necessarily true. You know, you like to think that recency bias doesn't matter, but also look at Patrick Corbin, who just had his first, like, really, really good year, and look at the contract that he got. So I do think that's part of it. I think people want to point to, like, they want to find the one reason that things are going differently than they used to. And I don't think there is one reason. I think there's a confluence of, like, six or seven different reasons, you know? You look at just the way teams are operating right now, you can't really go directly, you know, over the head of the front offices anymore. Like, you think about the Pujols contract, the Chris Davis contract, those were with ownership, you know? You could kind of bypass the analytical guys and go to the emotional guys. You don't really get to do that so much anymore, except for maybe in Washington. I do think that a lot of the front offices operate in the same way. You know, for me, that was a big part of the quote-unquote Moneyball A's, is they were one of the few teams thinking that way. Well, now every team thinks that way. You know, there's not really smart teams and dumb teams anymore. So I think that is the lack of diversity in that sense is a big part of it. And I also think, you know, you look at these big numbers that are being thrown around, and, you know, certainly not saying the teams can't afford it, because, you know, I think we all believe that they can. But in some sense, I understand, like, if you're a team and you're thinking to yourself, well, why do I want to pay this guy, you know, 10 times as much as, like, Mookie Betts is going to make, or whatever it's going to be, even though I don't think he's that much better of a player. Obviously, it's not a fair comparison. Mookie Betts is not a free agent, clearly, right. And that's what keeps the salary down. But I do think that teams kind of look at it in that way, and they say, well, you know, I can spend a decent amount of money and get a pretty good team, or I can spend an incredible amount of money and maybe only increase my likelihood by, like, you know, a couple of wins. And then, as you alluded to, in some of these divisions, that doesn't matter so much. You know, like, I think we all want the, like, Cleveland Indians to do more than they've done. I'm not sure that it would make any difference whatsoever in their likelihood of winning the division. And, you know, in a short playoff series, maybe a small difference, it's not excuse enough to me to not do anything. But, you know, you look at some teams, like the Dodgers obviously could use Bryce Harper. I still think they're the clear favorites in the West. To me, they are way better than the Rockies. And, you know, you look at that, you look at, you know, the aging curves have changed. Obviously, that should be in favor for Machado and Harper. And it's sort of like 20 different reasons you can point to as to why things have changed. And I really think the only way this is going to change is when the new bargaining agreement is up, however painful that process is going to be, there's going to probably have to be a way where players get paid younger and sooner. I don't think anybody really wants Manny Machado to make a ton more than Mookie Betts, because I don't think he's a ton better player than Mookie Betts, but that's the way the current system is set up.
Right, and Mookie Betts will get his, you would imagine, when it's his turn, and he'll get his at a relatively young age too. But that's the way it's always been in baseball, though, you know. But and I agree with that front offices now, you've got so many people in front offices who are doing things in a smarter way. And yeah, I, on this podcast and other podcasts and online, we used to always make fun of teams that spent everything in free agency. But and I still believe that spending a lot of money on a guy who's 32, spending a 5-year deal on a guy who's 32 is not a smart idea. But that's the point, is like these 26-year-old free agents don't come around very often. And I wonder if like the Jason Hayward deal has people nervous, because he was a young free agent and you know, they dumped a lot of money in his lap and he hasn't performed that way. But, you know, Bryce Harper could very well be one of the five best pure hitters in the game. And Machado has a unique blend of offense and defense that both of their skills put them on Hall of Fame tracks at 26 years old. It's just, I realize 10-year deals make everybody nervous, but, you know, there's going to be opt-outs in these contracts anyway, and we don't know exactly what these contracts are going to look like. It's just, it's so interesting to me how the market is shaping up here, and the fact we still don't have an answer for these guys. And Mike, it seems like we're not going to, everything you keep hearing is that they're not close. Like, no one's close to signing. Like, we might be going into February again with either of these guys, and that the Phillies are content to just kind of let this play out into February, which is going to drive us all even crazier.
And not only that, I really do think at a certain point this is holding up everything else. You know, like, why would you go out and sign, not that they're going to make anywhere near the same contract, obviously, but why would you go sign, you know, Freddie Galvis or Mike Moustakas to play shortstop or third base if you still think, oh, I might end up being the team that gets Manny Machado? Or, you know, maybe I think I'll end up being able to trade for Miguel Andujar because the Yankees will get Manny Machado, or whatever version of that you want to come out. So I think you're right. I think the agents are really trying to hope that somebody else jumps into it, or that they feel the pressure and decide they have to jump into it. I do think a somewhat underrated part of all of this is probably just the rivalry between these two agents. I think Boris and Lozano neither one of them want to be the guy who blinks first or takes less for their client. And I certainly understand you can't be successful in that kind of role if you don't have a large ego, and those guys have certainly done incredibly well, and they have earned that status. But I do wonder how much of that is playing the role here. Nobody wants to be the guy that blinks first, unless you get the huge contract, which it seems like no team actually wants to give them right now.
Well, and that's the big key for Phillies fans. And I mentioned this at the very beginning of the podcast, is as Phillies fans, and we, you know, follow what the Phillies beat writers are reporting very closely, the Phillies seem to be locked up like Fort Knox. They don't leak. This organization does not leak out information, generally speaking. And we have not seen hide nor hair of what the Phillies have offered Machado, what they might be preparing to offer, or whether they have even gotten around to offering Harper anything officially yet. But we see, okay, the White Sox have offered, maybe it's $200 million. We saw $220 million last week or something like that. Then we saw $175 million today. We've heard the Nationals at the beginning of the season, at the offseason, offered a 10-year, $300 million contract. Well, is that still on the table? Is it not on the table? What have the Yankees been willing to do? We've heard all these different teams speculated with years and numbers. Really, the only thing we're hearing about the Phillies is seemingly a universal belief that they're going to get one of these two guys. But that's what's driving Phillies fans crazy, too, is there doesn't seem to be a leading contender here. I mean, we don't know if it's going to be Harper or Machado. At the beginning of the offseason, it seemed like Machado was the clear target. Now it feels like Harper's the clear target. And that's what's driving Phillies fans crazy, is we're getting kind of ping-ponged around here with no information at all. And the only recourse, I guess, is just to turn off the tweet deck and wait till somebody signs. But I think the problem here, Mike, too, is that it's really this should have been a fun offseason, you know, as Phillies fans, you know, waiting to get one of these two guys should have been a fun pursuit. And now it's just all the fun has been taken out of this. And maybe the fun will come back when one of them signs. But, you know, I guess generally speaking, where are you at on where the Phillies stand with both of these two guys?
I think they really are in an interesting spot. You know, I like their offseason so far. I think their bullpen, especially with Robertson, is going to be surprisingly good and deep. And I think that's a big deal. And obviously, I think I liked the Machado deal more than most. And the Segura deal was pretty good, too. Like, the defense is better. The lineup is better. They still have a lot of holes. You know, I was thinking about this. I was doing my top 10 lists for MLB Network the other day. Mm-hmm. And I think I only had two, maybe three Phillies in any of my top 10 positional lists. Like, Nola made it, and Hoskins made it at first base. And I might have had McCutcheon as, like, my last right fielder. And that sort of says to me a little bit that, sure, they'd be better if they got Harper or Machado, unquestionably. I don't know that either one of them makes them good enough. And I'm not saying that's reason to not do it, because they should. But this is still a team that's got a decent amount of talent, kind of a lot of holes, and in a very, very tough division. Like, I don't think if they sign Harper, I'm going to make them the favorite over the Nationals tomorrow. You know, and it certainly would put them in the conversation. But, you know, they were not – I don't want to say they weren't a good team last year, because I think the slump at the end of the year really hurt them more than their talent would indicate. But they got outscored. You know, they were under 500. This isn't a team that was, you know, one player or five wins away from being in the playoffs. So I think they're moving in the right direction, but they really need some of the guys who had lousy years last year to step up. You know, Herrera, obviously, Kingery, for sure. But as you, I think, you know, I'm a pretty big fan of Nick Pivetta, and I think he could really make a step forward. So there's talent, for sure. It's a really tough division. The Nationals have had a pretty good offseason. I still don't know what to make of the Mets, but they've improved at least. So, you know, it's weird to say that they need to go get one of these monsters and then keep adding, but I kind of sort of think they do, because I don't think either one of those guys by themselves is enough.
Well, it did, in talking about, and can't forget sleep on the Braves either, who I don't know the Braves have gotten. I think the Braves have kind of treaded water this offseason, replacing a couple of guys they're losing with some new guys, but they still won the division last year, and the Braves are going to be awfully tough as well. But, you know, a lot of Phillies fans now looking at some of these deals that Machado is apparently considering, or that he's been offered, and if it's about $200 million, you know, the speculation is, well, can the Phillies sign both guys? Can they sign Harper and Machado? And we've seen conflicting reports on that as well. You know, we've seen some executives telling beat writers that, you know, there's no chance the Phillies are telling people that they're not going to sign both guys, and then saying, well, hold on, you know, maybe that, maybe not so fast. I wonder what would be better for the team overall, signing Harper and Machado. Would it be signing Harper and then a combination of Keuchel and Kimbrel, or would it be signing Machado, Keuchel, and Kimbrel? I kind of wanted to get your thoughts. What do you think would be a better package? And this is pie in the sky. Let's just, I'm throwing all logic out the window. If we're talking about spending stupid money, this is the scenario. Signing either Harper and Machado, or Harper, Keuchel, and Kimbrel, or Machado, Keuchel, and Kimbrel. Which of those three options do you like the best?
That's a really interesting question. Personally, I'm kind of down on Dallas Keuchel. I don't have a hugely favorable view of him. You know, he's kind of the guy, if he doesn't get those ground balls, we've seen what happens. You know, he's had that lousy season. He was okay last year. His grounders were down. His strikeouts were down. So, he's not someone I look at as like a top one or two starter anymore. I think what I would do if I were the Phillies and I had the option to do like anything nuts is I would sign probably Machado or Harper, pick whichever one. And then I would also go sign AJ Pollock to play center field, because I don't know how much I trust Herrera. Like, I like him, I think, a lot, but, you know, he's not a great defender. He's kind of an inconsistent hitter. You know, he was good the previous 3 years, not so much last year. Like, if you really want to add some depth, you know, add Harper and Pollock and then McCutcheon in the outfield. And now you're talking, right? And, you know, yeah. Kimbrel, sure, I like Kimbrel. I'm certainly not going to say you don't want Kimbrel. But, I'm not sure that his best days aren't behind him. He still misses bats. The command issues are kind of scary. And I like the bullpen that the Phillies have put together kind of a lot, actually. Now, if we're signing like unlimited dollars here, then sure, go get him. But he's not one of the first guys I would look to.
And you wrote about Harper's defense earlier in the offseason. What are the defensive ramifications of signing either player? Because we know if Machado comes to Philadelphia, he likely plays third base. And I would imagine Harper is probably playing left field for Philadelphia.
Yeah, I don't think Harper is actually the worst defensive outfielder in baseball, which is, you know, either him or I think Blackman, maybe Nick Castellanos. That's what the numbers said last year. So I was curious about that. It was a little concerning to me that this guy who's only 26 and is supposedly this incredible athlete could actually be that bad on defense. And I wanted to know why. I wanted to know, you know, why the numbers said that. And the first thing I noticed was that, you know, the numbers were correct. He was actually that bad last year, but I was curious about what that said about him going forward. And, you know, some guys you look at and you say, well, he just doesn't have the skill. Like, he's not capable of playing this position very well. I think Rhys Hoskins is someone you'd probably say that about.
Yeah.
But, you know, for Harper, I wanted to know why. And it was interesting. Like, he didn't get slower. You know, I thought that would be the first thing. And what happened, it seemed to me, was a couple of things. He just wasn't aggressive. There were a lot of balls that were, you know, easily catchable, both in my opinion and by the numbers, that he just didn't seem to go for. Like, he held back and let them bounce in front of him. There were a couple balls where he got to, and they hit him right in the glove, and he just couldn't close the deal, and most of them weren't marked as errors because errors are stupid. And then there were definitely a couple where he was kind of going, you know, back and, you know, towards the right field line, towards the right field foul pole. And it seemed like maybe he pulled up at the wall, and I'm not an amateur psychiatrist. I'm not saying he wasn't trying to get himself hurt, but you would certainly believe it in his contract here, especially a guy who's running the walls and gone all out and injured himself before. So the point there is I didn't see much that says he can't play the outfield anymore. You know, he's still got the speed, maybe a little better positioning, a little more focus, a little more aggressiveness. I don't think he's a gold glover, but I think he can be a competent outfielder. And that's really all you need for the next couple of years if he hits like you think he can hit.
You recently also wrote a piece about the Phillies' defense and its effect on pitchers last year, and we looked at Aaron Nola's season, and we saw the Baseball Reference wins above replacement and how insanely high that was, giving him a lot of credit for some bad defense behind him. We saw the Fangraphs wins above replacement number much lower for him because they use some different analytics to calculate their wins above replacement statistic. But looking at Nola and Jake Arrieta and Nick Pivetta, Vince Velasquez, Zach Eflin, and you had a very interesting piece noting the effect of the defense behind each of those five guys, and that the Phillies' lackluster defense, very poor defense last year, didn't affect each pitcher the same, did it?
No, I was kind of interested by this. Like, this is one situation where, you know, the eye test and the traditional numbers and the advanced metrics all tell the same story, which was that the Phillies' defense last year was atrocious. And, you know, certainly all of your listeners watched that, and yep, they know that no matter what the numbers say. But I thought, you know, Aaron Nola had a 2.37 ERA. That's really, really good. And I thought to myself, wow, if he's doing that in front of a lousy defense, what's he going to do in front of an improved defense? You know, I don't think it's going to be a great defense, but no more Hoskins in the outfield, Segura, shortstop. Like, it's going to be better, right? So I wanted to know, How much better would that be for him? And it was really interesting to me, you know, even just starting with simple batting average on balls in play, right? Arrieta and Nola both had a lower batting average on balls in play than the league average. And the other three guys, Eflin, Velasquez, and Pivetta, all had higher numbers. So, okay, you might think to yourself, it's about quality of contact, right? The two veteran aces induce weaker contact than the other three. Possibly true. But, you know, I looked at every pitcher who threw 100 innings last year. Pivetta's BABIP was the 10th highest, and Nola's was the 10th lowest, you know, in front of the same defense. And that was kind of interesting to me. It stood out. And then I thought to myself, well, maybe Nola had this low ERA because there were so many errors behind him that he had a ton of unearned runs, right? He had one unearned run the entire season. Arrieta had 17 behind him, which is
crazy.
That was insane to me. That stood out a lot. And then going back to like the quality of contact, well, we can measure that with StatCast now, right? We can look at the likelihood of a hit on every batted ball based on launch angle and exit velocity. And it kind of told the same story. I won't go into every single number right here, but the point is Arrieta and Nola each did slightly better than you would expect, both on ground balls and on all balls in play. And the other three guys did slightly worse. And the spread there, you know, for Nola, for example, he actually had 24 points better in batting average on ground balls. And Nick Pivetta, 96 points worse. He induced an expected 231 average on ground balls, and he actually gave up a 327 average on ground balls. So these things are all telling me the exact same story, which is that the bad Phillies defense was not distributed equally, and it actually affected these guys a lot. And it sort of makes me think that not only, you know, is Nola's ERA probably not going to go down because of defense, he and Arrieta, you know, might be expected to do slightly worse next year. And Pivetta, who I've always liked, you know, great curveball, you know, more than a strikeout per inning last year, it seems like he could do better if he actually has some better defense behind him. So I thought that was fascinating. And, I, you know, some, one of the other Phillies bloggers, Matt Winkleman, sent me something interesting that showed me that not only was it not the same performance behind these guys, it wasn't necessarily the same defenders. Like, it seems like they actually trotted out the lousy defense behind the younger three guys and the good defense behind Nola and Arrieta,
yeah,
which I thought was really interesting. Like, you think about Carlos Santana at third base, not mm-hmm. equally distributed. So anyway, the point is, yes, the Phillies defense will be better, but I don't think it's fair to say that it's going to affect everybody equally. And that kind of goes to your point about that, you know, Baseball Reference wins above replacement number. They're giving Nola credit for that 230-something ERA in front of terrible defense, even though he didn't actually seem to have that terrible defense behind him. So I'm not sure I buy that one entirely.
Yeah, I remember multiple times last year where Gabe Kapler trotted out a lineup that had better infield defense when Jake Arrieta or Aaron Nola would be on the mound and would try to put his better outfielders out there when Pivetta or Velasquez would be in the game, and that probably accounts for a lot of that. That's fascinating. Last question for you, Mike. You mentioned Pivetta a couple times as a guy you think could really take a step forward in 2019. Is there another player from last year's Phillies team that you think could take a step forward in 2019, maybe somebody on the position side?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, you got to hope it's Kingery, right? I mean,
yeah,
he was probably one of the worst hitters in baseball last year, and I don't think that's fair to him. I think it was a combination of, you know, being forced to play shortstop in multiple positions where he wasn't necessarily prepared to do that. And I think just the way that things worked out with his contract extension, you know, he probably deserved to be in the minors at some point. And I think they didn't necessarily do that because of that deal. So I don't think he's a future star necessarily anymore, but I do think he's better than that. I do think he's an above average player. And I think the Phillies are going to need him to be. You know, that's a big opportunity for improvement from within. And that's kind of what they need. It can't just be guys they bring in. It's got to be a Kingery or Nick Williams or Herrera, you know, somebody like that who steps up as well.
I have high hopes for Odubel Herrera. I know you mentioned him just a second ago, but I'm going to be talking about Odubel Herrera more here in just a minute. I think he actually showed up to Clearwater already down in Florida to kind of get some work in. They say he's in great shape, best shape of his life, apparently, Mike. And you know, the hope is that he came into camp last year in a little bit pudgier than normal. So hopefully last year was a wake-up call. I like a bounce-back season from Odubel Herrera. But we'll see whether or not Odubel Herrera is even a part of this the team next year because depending on who they get, if they land Harper, they land somebody else, still some time to make some changes to the 2019 roster. We live in interesting times, my friend, but thank you so much for coming on and talking to me about it. Mike Petriello from StatCast and MLB.com. Again, follow Mike on Twitter at Mike_Petriello. Mike, thanks for taking the time coming back on Hitting Season. I appreciate it.
Anytime, John.
This ball is out of here.
Well, look, we need to get away from the hot stove for a little while because it's driving everybody crazy. It's driving you crazy. It's driving me crazy. And one of the things I want to do on the podcast over the next couple of weeks is talk about some of the players who are going to be on the 2019 team that were already on the team last year. And one of the guys that I want to focus on this time around is Odubel Herrera because he is one of the more interesting players on this team. He was, of course, the first guy that Matt Klentak signed to a contract extension, identifying him as a member of the core. And he had some good very early in the season last year. The first 2 months of the season last year were very good for Odubel Herrera. But the last 4 months were largely lost for him. And so it's really important that he make a good impression here in 2019, especially if the Phillies get somebody like Bryce Harper, because they already got Andrew McCutchen to play one of the corner outfield spots. And the good news is that Odubel Herrera is already in Clearwater, already working out in 50-degree weather. He's the first position player there working on his game. He's reportedly in outstanding shape. And that's good news because Herrera came into camp a little overweight last year. That was something Gabe Kapler noted at the winter meetings. He said, we're going to demand that he come into camp in better shape. One adjustment that Kapler said he was prepared to make was to demand that Herrera come into camp in the best condition of his career. And the reports we've gotten from Clearwater indicates that's exactly what's happened. He is in terrific physical condition. Now, back in October, Herrera told Megan Montemuro that he was micromanaged by Pete Maccann's staff in 2017, and he talked about being free of the influence of Freddie Galvis and Andres Blanco last year, not having those guys always on his back to be on time and to get to meetings. And, you know, I think what we saw last year was that Herrera really needs that oversight. Odubel really benefited from having Galvis and Andres Blanco on his butt, and he didn't like it. Of course he didn't like it. Why would he? But he clearly needed some accountability partners, and he didn't have any last year, apparently. Gabe Kapler was not, you know, it was his first year on the job. He didn't want to be Odubel Herrera's babysitter. Kind of, he probably figured that a veteran like Herrera should be able to police himself. But I think we saw that Herrera still needs that kind of tough love. And we'll see if Kapler's able to give that to him this year. It certainly seems as though a little bit of that was dished out when they had a conversation about him coming into camp in better shape. But we'll see whether or not Odubel Herrera actually is able to translate his better physical condition, getting there early, into on-field success in 2019. I think it's great. I think it shows that he's taking everything seriously here in 2019, and he needs to. He needs to take things seriously because his position on this team, even though he has a major league contract, it's a very movable contract. And I certainly think that there is still a chance he could get dealt this offseason, especially when you look back at how last season was. He was not in the opening day lineup last year, which was a curious decision by Kapler, but he started the second game in center field and reached base the following that night. And all told, he reached base in the first 44 games of the season last year for a 45-game on-base streak that dated back to the final game of 2017. That was the fourth longest in team history. Remember, through late May, I think it was, what was it, May 25th. Through May 25th, he was off to the best start of his career. He was hitting .339, .401, .531 with 7 homers and 11 doubles through his first 47 games. We were talking about the guy like he was an MVP candidate. I remember specifically talking with Justin and Liz on Hitting Season that he was the best player on the team. A better player than Rhys Hoskins. But from May 26th through the end of the season, Herrera hit just .214, .266, .367. And while he's never been a big on-base guy, he got on base just 27% of the time over the last 4 months of the season. Now, he did see an increase in his home runs with 15 over the last 4 months of the season. From that point on, yeah, over the last 4 months. And he had 22 on the season, but that's really not a ton. And he had just 8 doubles over his last 400 plate appearances. In his last 101 games of the season, Odubel Herrera had just 8 doubles. That's crazy. Now, was a change in the team's hitting philosophy partly to blame? Well, maybe. Odubel did hit more fly balls this year, 37.1%, up from his career mark of 33.4%. But his infield fly ball rate skyrocketed, was up to near 14% last year, way up from 8.8% in 2017. And that focus on elevating the ball, I think, could have messed up his ability to make contact in the strike zone as well. Now, he didn't expand the zone more in 2018, but he was a lot worse at making contact within the strike zone. He had a zone contact rate of just shy of 60%. That was down from 63.5% the year before and 67.3% 2 years ago. And there's a lot of speculation at the beginning of the offseason whether or not the Phillies would trade Odubel, and it still could happen, especially if the Phillies sign Bryce Harper. Although that, I think, you know, putting Roman Quinn in as the everyday center fielder, that's dicey. I love Roman Quinn. I think he's got all the potential in the world. I love his speed. I love his defense. And he's got a little bit more pop than you would expect from a guy his size. But I don't trust the injury history, and I don't think the Phillies trust the injury history. I'd love for him to be the guy to take over in center field because I think he is a dynamic center fielder. But I also like Odubel Herrera, and I think Odubel Herrera will be a better defensive center fielder this year than he was last year. I think the outfield defensive shifting really hurt some of the Phillies' defensive metrics, and frankly, all the defensive metrics last year I'm throwing out the window. I know the Phillies' defense was bad last year. I don't need the defensive run saved to tell me that the Phillies' defense was bad. We could see it. We could see it, and all of the defensive metrics backed it up, so I get it. But I don't think Odubel Herrera was as bad as the numbers indicated last year, just like I don't think Bryce Harper was as bad defensively as the numbers indicated last year. But nevertheless, I think being in better shape, being in camp earlier, will help his numbers to be better. And I think it'll help him to be a better defensive player. And I think when you have McCutchen and Harper in the corners, neither one of those guys can play center field. So unless you feel like some combination of Roman Quinn and Aaron Altair and Nick Williams can get the job done in center field, then I think you got to keep Odubel Herrera around unless you're able to trade somebody to play center field, or you go out and sign AJ Pollock instead of Bryce Harper, and you put Pollock in center field, and you sign Machado to play third base. Those are some of the things that could happen that could see Odubel Herrera moved out of town. I also think you'd be moving Odubel Herrera at his lowest point. He clearly was coming off the worst season of his career after three straight seasons of being a remarkably consistent player. Now, he's up and down. There's no doubt about it. Odubel Herrera is a streaky hitter, and I know that drives people crazy. And I know some of his antics when he loses focus, some games he just shows up not ready to play. And he's in another world, and he's stepping out of the batter's box with two strikes as pitchers are getting ready to throw. He's making base running mistakes. He's losing track of where he is in the outfield. I know all that stuff exists with Odubel Herrera, and it drives people crazy. Trust me, it drives me crazy too. Drives me absolutely bonkers. But Odubel Herrera is also talented, and he's been able to get away with all of that stuff because he is extremely talented. But last year, that wasn't the case. He did not have a good enough season to make up for his lapses. And so that's what has to get better this year. He has to be in better shape, which it sounds like he is. It sounds like Odubel Herrera is taking the 2019 season seriously. And getting a bounce back season from Odubel would be monstrous for this team. And we saw last year how a hot Rhys Hoskins and hot Odubel Herrera can carry the offense. Just those two guys. Imagine more consistency from Odubel Herrera in an offense where Hoskins is still hitting well and it has Harper or Machado with McCutchen and Gene Segura in it. It's a good offense, guys. But we need Odubel Herrera to bounce back. He's off to a good start, working out in Clearwater, apparently determined for things to be different this year. I sure hope that's the way it goes. I sure hope that's how it works out, because that would be a huge, huge difference maker for the 2019 Phillies.
This ball is out of here!
And now it's time for your stat of the week. If the Machado White Sox contract rumor is true, and everything we're hearing is that it's not true, but if the 7-year deal that Nightingale and Buster Olney had talked about earlier, if that is actually accurate, that would be about a $25 million a year deal over 7 years. And Corey Seidman put together a list of players whose average deals already are at least $25 million a year. And tell me how many of these players are better than Manny Machado. Zach Greinke at $34.4 million. Miguel Cabrera at $31 million. David Price, $31 million. Clayton Kershaw at $31 million. Max Scherzer at $30 million. Yoenis Cespedes at $27.5 million. John Lester at $25.8 million. Justin Verlander, $25.7 million. And then Felix Hernandez, Giancarlo Stanton, Steven Strasburg, and Jake Arrieta all at $25 million again. Manny Machado better than just about all of those players more valuable, and that doesn't even take into account all of the players who make more than $175 million, have deals signed for more than $175 million. Again, that's the contract that Buster Olney and Bob Nightingale say the Chicago White Sox offered to Manny Machado, which, of course, his agent Dan Lozano later refuted most harshly, as you heard us talk about earlier in the podcast. But still, 7 years, $175 million, it just can't be right. It can't be right. It just doesn't make sense intellectually speaking. Folks, that'll do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. My thanks to Mike Petriello for coming on the podcast once again. If you haven't done so, guys, please head on over to Apple Podcasts. Leave a rating and a review for Hittin' Season, Continued Success, The Dirty Inning, all of the Good Fight podcasts. Your contributions to that are greatly appreciated. It does help other Phillies fans find the podcast on Apple Podcast as we move up those Apple Podcast rankings. And subscribe to the podcast if you don't already, and check out the Patreon as well. Go to patreon.com/hittinseason to figure out all the new stuff we've got there. Justin just uploaded a new Hittin' Season for you on the Patreon, so make sure you check that out. Thanks everybody for tuning in. I'll talk to you all next time right here on Hittin' Season.
Hey everybody, how you doing? Well, that's good. My name is Bill Matz. I am the director of Fun and Games for Broad Street Hockey Radio Podcasts.
And I am Kelly, the deputy managing editor of BroadStreetHockey.com.
I'm Steph Driver, the NHL editorial manager for SB Nation.
And I am Charlie O'Connor, lead Flyers writer for TheAthletic.com.
And together we make up BSH Radio, one of the shows that you get at the SB Nation podcast family. We have a lot coming to you this year, and we want you to listen to our show. It is just an all Flyers, all the time show, so much content. I really hope you listen to it. It is a great piece of the SB Nation podcast family, along with all your other favorite sports.
We all love hockey, specifically the Flyers.
Let's go the Flyers.
The hockey team of Flyers.